even chance getting high-centered with these bastards swarming around like yellow jackets.
The alley behind it filled instantly with ambushers, waving spears and clubs, and at least one modern firearm. An M1 carbine to Ryan's quick glimpse. They stopped and stared with comical surprise as the wag chunked through a gear change and came hurtling straight back at them like a multi-ton rocket. Most of them were muties, although none in this clot of a half dozen or so was either as huge or grotesquely malformed as the first creature they had seen. Most were downright small. In fact, the one closest behind the Hummer, whose wide anthracite eyes locked on Ryan's for a fraction of a second before the Hummer's rear bumper took him in the thighs and body slammed him to the ground, looked as human as Ryan. The wag bucked.
Take that, bastard!
The vehicle's huge cleated tires rolled over several ambushers, unfortunate enough not to be able to spin around and clear the alleyway in time. One mutie, a being reminiscent of a sticky, but with a dry-looking tan skin covered with reddish-brown camouflage rosettes, clung to the side of the house on Ryan's side with toe and finger pads. Instead of knocking him free, the Hummer's bulk spun him, pinned him, and then rotated his body, crushing and grinding simultaneously as it roared backward down the alley. A blast of horrid carrion eater breath blew in the window as the creature rolled by between the brown stucco wall and the wag's steel flank. Then the Hummer was back on what passed for the Ville's main street. It had flooded with marauders, half a hundred or more. Mildred just kept the wag grinding in reverse, squashing a couple more of their less agile ambushers, turning the wheel slightly to angle the Hummer into another alley catty-corner across the way behind them. For a moment they passed between mud houses, with more clearance this time. Then they were out and backing at a brisk clip across another street, right at an opening into darkness. The structure was larger than most of the houses, with double wooden doors open wide. Muties were issuing from the interior with crates and boxes in their arms. Looters. They scattered. A taller than average one, who looked normal aside from having a mouth that stretched clear to the back of the jawbone on either side, was caught standing right in the middle of the entry, clutching a box of what looked like hand tools. He stared at the onrushing wag as if jacklighted.
Damn, Millie!
I'll take that as a thanks.
Sure, why not?
Five muties cringed against the walls to either side of the wag. GB popped up out of the top of the vehicle.
Afternoon!
As Uzi chopped down the three to the right with two scything back-and-forth bursts. The one nearer the door on Ryan's side dropped what he was carrying and ran right out into the sunlit street. The other, who had long tufts of dark hair sprouting at random from face and body, raised a foot-long wrench over his head and lunged at Ryan.
All right, have it your way.
The mutie staggered back, gushing blood from a split forehead. The one-eyed man poked his Sig Sauer through the door's still-open window and shot him twice in the chest. Then, because he didn't go down fast enough, he shot him again through the forehead. The remaining mutie seemed to be making good his escape. Unhurriedly, Doc opened his door and unfolded himself. Laying his heavy lama across his upraised left forearm, he aimed and fired through his own open window. The creature threw up taloned hands and went face down on the hardpan.
Well, he who turns and runs away lives to slit our bellies later in the day.
Jack did a roll over the rear seat of the Hummer, piled out Doc's door with his python in his snow-white fist. Ryan was already racing along the wall toward the gaping entryway. He darted out into the sunlight, firing his 9mm blaster. Jack wasn't bothering to aim, merely trying to keep the muties who had fled the Hummer's charge heading in the right direction, long enough for him to grab hold of the open wooden door.
Jack, help me with these doors!
Rat!
The two men had adrenaline on their side. Even the slight Jack was able to get his door into motion. Both halves swung back into place well before the marauders outside could get themselves sorted out enough to interfere. Ryan swung a hefty plank down into waiting brackets to bar the door shut. A smaller doorway opened in the wall on the driver's side. Mildred got out with her ZKR in hand. JB wheeled out of the top of the pintle mount, scrambled across the Hummer's torn and blistered Kevlar roof to drop down beside her, Uzi in hand.
Cover me!
Right.
Mildred darted through the door. She had to duck down to get through. JB hit the door jamb with his Uzi up and ready.
Clear. Just one mutie who wasn't hid near as well as he thought.
Damn, Ryan. Nuke me till I glow and shoot me in the dark, but I think this is a garage.
Ryan had popped out his partially empty mag from his hand blaster, dropped it in a pocket, and brought out a fresh magazine from another. He weighed it in his hand, eyeing it ruefully. Not many left. He jammed it decisively home in the well.
Think maybe you're right, JB. Even got a grease pit dug in the middle of the floor.
Jack whipped out one of his throwing knives, stuck it in his teeth, dropped to the packed earth floor, and slithered under the rear of the Hummer.
No muties hired.
Jack slithered back out.
Ryan, John Barrymore, come take a look at this.
The companions quickly joined Doc.
What is it, Doc?
A hatchway to the roof. It would appear the erstwhile occupants of this ville built with defense in mind.
Ryan swiftly noted that the adobe walls were a good half yard thick, enough to stop even a 7.62mm round from his Steyr. The windows were potential vulnerabilities, but also served as firing ports. Apparently, they constituted a compromise between comfort of living and defensibility. That the residents had enjoyed the luxury of making such a compromise spoke volumes for the relative stability they'd enjoyed. Until today, anyway.
Yeah, too bad they didn't stay alert enough.
A ville like this is used to trading, Ryan. My bet is they got took by some kind of trick, like that Trojan horse Doc told us about.
Actually, that was me. My mother read the Iliad to me when I was young.
Whatever. It sounded like the kind of thing that had come out of Doc's head, anyway.
Is this the face that launched 1,000 ships and burned the topless towers of Ilium?
Doc's drawn old face had gone pallid under grime and suntan, and sweat stood out around his hairline. Reaction to the battle was setting in. He swayed.
Emily. My Emily. Why hast thou forsaken me?
Mildred, who had climbed back into the Hummer to check on Christy, jumped out with a water bottle in hand. She held it to his lips.
Here, old man.
He drank greedily, drooling water out the right side of his mouth.
You just sit down here a minute. Rest yourself.
She led him to a stool by the wall and sat him down.
Actually, the ville looks deserted to me, not like it was fought over. I wonder if the people didn't just bug when the raiders turned up. By the way, Mildred, how's Christy?
Coming around. Still feverish. I hope she doesn't try to get up, but... Hey!
She pointed toward the double doors. The bottom line of sun glare was interrupted at several points by shadows. Feet. The muties were gathering right outside.
I swear one day this shit has got to end!
Holding up his Uzi with one hand, JB strode toward the front of the garage. The massive walls seemed to bulge from its yammer. Weighing not much less than Ryan's sniper rifle, the machine pistol was heavy enough to be fired one-handed without climbing uncontrollably. The armorer walked a long burst from right to left across the double doors. Little points of brightness appeared. Pencils of sunlight stabbed into the gloom like yellow laser beams.
Let them writhe. Help keep the bastards' minds right.
As Ryan had just moments before, JB hefted the empty magazine in his hand.
You're running low. Can't be doing that shit much more.
Any weapons, Mildred? Ammo?
Nope. No trace. If any were here, they were the first thing the muties cleared out.
JB walked around the wag to the sprawled bodies of the looters he'd shot when they first rolled into the garage and knelt to inspect them.
We're a little bit lucky. We got a Colt 45 ACP, government model of 1911, or reasonable facsimile, in not too bad a shape, all cocked and locked.
He held up a hefty blaster with checkered wooden grips pinched between thumb and forefinger.
This chill's even got a couple spare mags on him.
He straightened and prodded the corpse with the toe of his boot.
And you know what? He ain't even a mutie.
I saw a couple of what looked like norms. The first dude I ran over was one.
We'll sort out the mystery later.
Ryan strode over to Doc, who was sitting slumped, his head lolling to the side. He took a pinch of the old man's cheek, which hung slack, and pulled his head up.
Doc, you can't zone out on us now. We're already down Christy. We need everybody else to hold the fort until we can figure a way to get out of here with all our parts.
No need to carry on so, my dear boy. I was simply resting my eyes.
Good enough. Welcome back.
We got an exit strategy?
Our best defense is still driving real fast, Millie.
Yeah, maybe we can hold them off until dark, thin them out some, then try to bust out.
They strike me as raiders, like the Scythians of yore, albeit lacking horses. They will naturally incline toward a transient strategy rather than a persisting one.
Which translates as hit and runs their style rather than sticking around to keep us under siege. Probably even true. Maybe we get out of this crack after all.
If they don't burn us out.
Likely a last resort. The one our wagon blasters. All the same, we better get set to discourage that sort of behavior. Mildred, is there a back way out?
Yeah, rear the little office. Big water jug in there too, while I'm thinking of it. Seems clean.
That's something anyway. You and Jack hold in there. Watch the front and back doors. JB and Doc can hold in here.
What about you, Ryan?
I'll take the rifle up top, JB, see if I can do a little street cleaning. I'd better check on Christy first, real quick.
Make double quick. Mutie's coming.
Ryan entered the Hummer. Christy lay on her pallet in the cargo compartment with her green eyes open.
Lover.
None other.
Ryan leaned over to extend a water bottle to her. She reached for it.
Just lie back. You need to conserve your strength.
Reluctantly, she let him tilt the bottle to her lips.
Gaia's with me, but it's hard.
You just lie back, try to sleep. Let your mind and body concentrate on healing.
Outside?
We'll handle it. If we can't, having another body on the line too shaky to hold up a blaster wouldn't do us any good. This is your fight, Christy. Stay with it.
He capped the bottle and laid it beside her. Her hand gripped his with feverish strength. He felt the heat of the battle against infection raging inside her body. She pulled the back of his hand to her lips and kissed it. Then she laid her head back down and closed her eyes. Ryan placed her hand on her chest and made himself let go. There wasn't any more that he could do for her in the best of circumstances. She was young and strong and healthy, as tough as they came, and she had that Gaia-aided gift of healing. She'd pull through. He wouldn't even think of the alternative.
What now?
Oh, Jesus!
A hole appeared in one of the doors, knocking a slat-like splinter loose to stick out at a crazy angle from beneath it. JB ripped a short burst in response, flying through the wood. Ryan ducked quickly out of the Hummer, slung his Steyr. JB handed him the .45, square butt foremost.
Take this and the extras. Don't want to burn out that SIG.
Right.
The one-eyed man accepted the heavy hand blaster and tucked the two full reloads into his waistband. The SIG Sauer was a wonderful weapon for stealthy chilling, but the integral suppressor, aside from making the weapon heavier and less wieldy, tended to hold in heat. It had a tendency to lock in a firefight, and too much sustained firing would burn out the barrel. The .45 would spare the SIG for a while, not to mention their dwindling stocks of 9mm rounds. A wooden ladder hung on hooks by the wall, so that a person could scramble right up it to the hatch, and pull it up after. An old Indian trick from Pueblo days, long before the 20th century that Doc had told them about. Ryan climbed up to the hatch, carefully slid aside the iron bolt. He sucked in a deep breath, snicked off the big cold safety, and slammed open the hatch. Sunlight fell against his face like scalding water. He thrust the .45 up into it and swarmed after. To find himself staring along the rounded black top of the weapon into a pair of huge black eyes, shot through with veins and flecks of gold.
Holy shit!
The face surrounding those eyes wasn't norm, being drawn out into a dark snout with nostrils as convoluted as a bat's. But the surprised expression was unmistakable all the same. The eyes and the top part of the head that held them vanished into a dark haze. The mutie's body rolled over, flopping, black blood spurting from the lower jaw and stub of neck that remained. Ryan sprang upright on the roof. A norm-looking ambusher was frozen, having just crawled over the tall roof parapet behind the mutie whose head Ryan had just blown apart. He clutched a spear tipped with black volcanic glass.
Fire blast!
He went backward over the parapet with arms flailing. Something struck Ryan in the back beneath his left shoulder blade. He whirled into a crouch, brought the heavy hand blaster around in a two-fisted combat grip. A bandy-legged Norm stood on the roof of the next house, desperately trying to notch a second dart to the end of his throwing stick. Ryan centered his sights on the white stripe conveniently painted down the front of the Norm's ribby chest and pulled the trigger. The 1911 bucked and roared. The man sat, dropping dart and launcher. He felt his chest, looked up reproachfully from the blood on his fingers to Ryan. The man fell backward and out of sight. The one-eyed man went flat on his belly. Ryan thumbed on the safety, stuck the .45 inside the waist of his fatigue pants behind his right hip. Not an ideal means of carry, but Ryan was seasoned enough to know always to keep his finger out of the trigger guard until the weapon was drawn and pointing downrange, which much diminished his chances of becoming abruptly half-assed. He reached around to probe at his back. He felt nothing from where he'd been struck, not necessarily a good sign in itself. The impact site was impossible to reach and see, but he didn't feel any trace of blood. A quick check of the flat roof, covered with a thick and well-packed layer of the same hard earth that made up the street below, and here and there sprouting a clump of weeds, showed no sign of leakage. He caught sight of the dart, a simple shaft of some kind of wood, whittled to a point and probably hardened in a fire. It hadn't been thrown hard enough to penetrate his leather coat, which was one reason he still wore it, despite the heat. He unslung the stire, cracked the bolt, turned it, and pulled it back enough to glimpse a confirmatory gleam of brass, yellow in the merciless sun. He closed and locked the bolt again. Then he got a knee up to his chest and a boot under him, and raised himself cautiously for a look around. 3 houses up the block, a couple of man-like figures pointed at the apparition of his head. One of them threw a long blaster to its shoulder.
Oh, shit.
He ducked,